Hi, Amélie Chevillet, and this is Queer Voices, the podcast that makes queer voices louder.
Dear goddess, give me patience, tired of trying to explain. I've got zero tolerance when they fuck with my sacred space. Bar the trolls, hit the corners for escape. Build the platforms, take up space. Cold the scripts to infiltrate. Cause you're never not fighting a racist system that keeps powers in place and that fails to acknowledge the root of your pain. Took it too personal, over emotional. Where are you from? Are you beauty or brains? Over the top, I'm too little or too much. Damned if I do and I'm damned if I do not. Talking class, race, and sex into sections. My feelings are valid and I won't dismiss them. I was taught not to trust my own mind and decisions. My body is my body, I won't give them an apology. Indoctrinated habits, like smile, nod your head, I'll talk less, close my legs. What? That's exactly what I just said. Are you serious? If I lose my shit right now, will I just be dismissed right now? If I lose my shit right now, will I just be dismissed right now? Will I just be dismissed? Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby, you are enough. Hey, 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 hey. Welcome to the Sad Fam Club, baby, you are enough. Hey, hey.
Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Kim Mortal to the show. Kim is a Filipinx artist based in Vancouver on the west coast of Canada. Their work moves between hip-hop and theater. Kim Mortal explores queer love, Filipinx identity, and finding space to be fully themselves. With a dynamic fire rap cadence and a soothing vocal flow, their music hits you in the gut and stays with your heart. You might have heard their track, This Dyke, in the L Word Generation Q, or their song Stop Business as Usual, where they raise their voice against the genocide in Gaza. Kim Mortal's art is deeply political, but always rooted in something personal, and in the question of how we relate to each other in a world that isn't built equally for everyone. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Thanks a lot for being here today. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Want to quickly share who you are, your pronouns, and how you identify?
Yeah, so my artist stage name is Kim Mortal. My friends call me Kimbo. My pronouns are they, them. And you really covered ground on what I'm about and why I do what I do, and this is my third day here in Munich.
Nice. You grew up in British Columbia, the westernmost province of Canada. As a kid, what was that like for you?
Wow, well, I remember I was the youngest in my family for 5 years before my youngest brother was born, so I'm a middle child, and I have fond memories of, you know, playing in the backyard in the suburbs of Surrey, which is an hour away from the more popular city, Vancouver, in British Columbia. I have fond memories of making home videos to entertain myself with my brother and sister. And we would write scripts and make movies while my parents worked. And I have memories of going to big Filipino family gatherings. I had a lot of cousins growing up. And we would perform in front of our titas. So that's my aunties and my uncles, my titos. And we would perform as the Spice Girls. I was Sporty Spice, and all my cousins were all the different ones, and we would dance and sing, and I was very, very audacious in front of the camera, and I loved to make people laugh by making funny faces. Like, I was a very, like, interesting kid. And performing, I started in church, actually, because a lot of Filipino immigrant communities I was a part of, my family found community in church. So I went to about, like, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 churches growing up. That's how my family met other Filipino families. And I would perform, like, in church plays or, like, choir and stuff. And I grew up in a pretty religious background. So, like, a lot of Filipinos are known to be Catholic, but my family was Christian. So we went to all, like, I know all the Christian stuff. Like, I don't identify as Christian anymore. I'm spiritual. But yeah, I look back at, you know, that upbringing and I see so much flaws and so much religious trauma and, you know, the impacts of colonization on my people and how it's brainwashed a lot of us into, you know, submission to the authorities, you know, the quote unquote authority. But at the same time, it's interesting because that is how I first got on stage.
When you were in church, you mean?
Yes, just on those churches. Like, I was like 3 years old reciting a Bible verse. Those were my first bars as a rapper. Psalms 23. This little three-year-old little Filipina girl in a dress. And everyone was like, wow. But yeah, it's cute, but it's also funny that that's my very start.
Kim, what does being queer mean to you?
Wow. Well, being queer is questioning everything. It's being critical about the powers that be. It's very political. I don't understand it as just, you know, your sexual orientation or your gender orientation. It's always like radical. Like, there's the history of protest and resistance, and that is resistance to, like, normativities and what you're supposed to be, you know, what they kind of make you believe you have to be. So it's liberation, it's self-definition, it's beautiful rebellion. Oh my God, it's art, it's music, it's like how I live my life, how I relate to people, how I love, the possibilities of connection and shape-shifting. It's magic, it's beyond language. Even queer, like, doesn't exist, like, that word doesn't exist in, you know, Filipino languages, but it's ancient, it's very old, and it's healing. So in my culture, with Filipinos, before colonizers came to our lands, there was healers in our land called Babaylan. And Babaylan are kind of like in between genders, or all genders. And they were the first that colonizers went for to kill them because they knew they were powerful and they were connected to spirit. People would come to them to heal themselves for medicine. And so that's an example of, like, queerness in my culture that is old. And it's part of my history. And I call it now queer, queerness. What it means to be Filipino for me as a second generation Filipino Canadian. Yeah.
When did you first realize you were queer?
Yeah, I have a very distinct memory, actually. I had just graduated university and I was at my friend's place. I was subletting her place. I was washing dishes one day, looking out the window. And then my friends at the time, all of them were queer. All of them identified as queer, trans, lesbian, dykes, buy everything, pan, all of it. And then my friend was like, Kim, are you queer? And then I was just washing a plate and I looked out the window and I was like, yeah. But yeah, I consider myself like a late bloomer as a queer person. I think I came out in my early 20s, mid 20s. That's the first time I said, yeah, I am queer.
Did you feel it before?
I'm the middle child and my sister was a year older than me. And like, I would always compare myself to her when I was a kid. And I was like, I really want to be a girl. You know, like, I really want to be girly. Like, I want to be like them. And like, I always never felt like I could reach that. You know, there's always this thing, like, I have sad memories, actually. I remember distinct memory. I was like 6 years old staring at a mirror and I was combing my hair and then I was pinching my nose and I wanted to pinch my nose because I wanted a pointy nose. Like I wanted to look like Barbie and I would look in the mirror and I would just cry at 6, 5 years old. And, you know, there's those little memories of just like, oh, I want to look a certain way that pertain to like, you know, femininity or like as a brown person wanting to look like a white girl, you know. And as I grew older, I was like, oh, this is like a thing. This is cool. Like I'm a tomboy. Maybe that's who I am. So I was Sporty Spice as a Spice Girl. And then being surrounded by queer poets and learning about possibilities of loving and being through spoken word, that's how I got into understanding myself on a deeper level and like falling in love with my life, falling in love with myself. And those were the years that my friend said, hey, are you queer? And I said, yeah.
Did you grow up with queer role models?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, like I'm thinking about cartoons right now, but I'm thinking of Recess. I don't know if you know Recess.
Nope.
Okay, so there's this like American cartoon that I grew up with called Recess. And there's this really cool character in the show called Spinelli. And like, I totally identify with her gender. I think she's such a badass. And she's just always like, why? She's always like, I don't want to do that. And she's kind of a role model. I think it was in animation that I saw that. But yeah, I feel like my role models are like my friends, you know, like they're the ones right beside me living their lives and just doing it, making dreams come true. And that's where I learn the most, if it's like right beside me.
Kim, what would you like to say to your younger self?
Well, when I was in high school, I was going through a lot of like family, domestic like abuse. I saw that a lot in my family. And a lot of the art I made was trying to process what was happening at home, but not talk about it at school. And I made so much visual art. I was always filling my sketchbook out. I would go everywhere with my sketchbook. And I wish that when I was younger, I wish I could tell myself what you are going through. It has to do with intergenerational trauma, and it's not your fault. And you are so beautiful in the way you are processing through art and music. And keep going, because your life is gonna be so beautiful.
Nice. How important is queerness in your everyday environment?
In my everyday environment? Well, even like coming here to Munich, like this was my very first show 2 days ago here in Munich, and I've never been here. And I flew in from Barcelona landed, and then I look around and I'm like, wow, I'm in a new city. No one knows me. Where are my people? You know? And then I go to a show and I do all my songs and I just leave my heart on the stage and I just trust that being myself, I'll find my people. And myself is queer and how I live is queer. And then I find my friends. And so it makes me feel like I'm not alone. So it's so important. It's like, I need to see weirdos. I need to see artists, because then it's like, okay, yeah, we're out here. We're all in this together. Yeah.
Does the word community mean something to you?
Yes. So as a musician, I feel like community shows versus industry shows, there's a very big difference. With community shows, you know, I meet people who believe in the same values as me, and we're all fighting for the same thing. So my music hits different with community, and there's a bit more soulfulness. And with industry, it's like sometimes you find community in industry shows, which is also a real thing. But the dominant thing in industry shows is like, what is your value? And like, how can we make money from this kind of thing? So as a musician, actually the first show I did in Barcelona 2 days ago, led by the Filipino community there. And that was no funding, no resources, basically activists in the community wanting to connect through art to a larger Filipino community. And for me, when I learned of the organizers in Spain, as a Filipino going to Spain, I was like, oh my God, there's Filipinos here, what? And I learned that the organization Espai Kapwa are one of very few progressive Filipino organizations in Barcelona, you know, wanting to grow youth and beyond in using art to organize and to, you know, call to attention land defenders in the Philippines who are in danger and, you know, wanting to build Filipino pride in our history. And just learning about community there, I was like, wow, it's hard to build community in a place like the colonizer's homeland. I want to contribute, you know, yes, hell yes, I'm not getting paid. I don't care. This is what I do this for. And so, yeah, community is so important for me as a rapper, as a musician, because it grounds me in why I do what I do. Because it's so easy for us as musicians to be like, all right, how many numbers, you know, how much money am I making? Clout chasing. And it's very easy to lose your compass. And so I love the feeling as well. I'm chasing the feeling of like community, love. And I have a song called Love that is about community love. And it just reorients what love is outside of just, you know, romance, you know, between, you know, one, two people. It's like big. It's a bigger thing of how love has been in my life.
You mentioned people being in danger in the Philippines. Would you like to say more about this?
Yes. So what I learned within the past week is an urgent matter. My dad actually was born in the region in which there was recently a massacre of 19 murdered by the state. These were land defenders, farmers, and activists. Two of them were Filipino American, and all of them were wanting to contribute to people on the ground in the Philippines. So peasant workers, farmers, wanting to reconnect to their land and fight for their rights. And the news of the mass murder of these people on the ground has reached globally. And for me, it's shocking as well because it's my dad's homeland. So that's Escalante and Negros Occidental in the Philippines. And that's just so close to home. Like literally 3 years ago, I went back to the Philippines to go to my dad's land. I went with my partner. And my dad and I have not talked for 7 years because I'm gay. So he just cut off contact. But I wanted to reconnect to that side of my family. So I went there and I spent time there in the water. I even met my aunt randomly, and she's queer. And I was like, you know, I met my second Lola, my second grandma for the first time. I was there. And to just know that, you know, these activists from abroad and locally dedicated themselves to, you know, tilling the land, spending time with youth, you know, educating youth on their rights, empowering, like doing work that we do here, but just in our homeland, and how they're treated as communist rebels, which is, I mean, that's a badass name. I love that. But they're seen as terrorists in their own homeland. And it just shows me like how we're turning against ourselves. You know, we're criminalizing ourselves for spending time on the land. And the message that sends out to, you know, people out there in the diaspora is that fighting for your rights is a bad thing. And I grew up hearing that from my dad and mom, you know, oh, don't speak out, put your head down and just work. It's dangerous. And it makes sense that that's what, you know, they say, because they've seen historically how the People's Revolution in the Philippines, people were murdered. And for me, as a Filipino Canadian, vocally, I've used my music to speak out about, you know, Gaza, the Philippines, you know, being gay, being trans, queer, non-binary. For me, I also have this privilege because I'm far from it. But there's different pressures that I have. And yeah, it's just, I hope to encourage others to like do all they can with their talents. You know, you might not be a musician or an artist, but like, we need to contribute to a movement because there's people burning out. There's people that are tired, exhausted, you know, being murdered. And the least we can do is use our privileges and our talents to contribute in any way.
Is it during this trip to the Philippines that you saw this big tree that's the cover of your album that came out in 2023?
Yes, I saw a balete, which is this tree that has like roots that grow from the branches and go all the way down to the ground. The most magnificent, weird, scary looking tree. And the myth is that in the center of the tree, you can enter and it's a portal. And that's where in the ancient past, people would make medicine and then come out and like from the tree, paper to write poetry, you know, like it's a scary tree though. There's also a lot of horror myths connected to the tree, which is exciting too. But that tree was the cover of my album.
Yeah. Kim, what do you love doing?
Wow. I love so much. It's actually funny. Like one of my friends imitated me and said, Kim is like this. Oh my God. I love that. I love that. I love that. So I love like so much, but I really love empowering people. Like I really love like making people go, yeah, I can do that. Like I love like making people feel like it's possible. And especially if they're like, you know, perfectionist about their art, you know, or they're shy, I like seeing what they're good at and being like, oh my God, totally do that. Like, go for it, you know? So I like that. I love doodling. I love a good coffee. I love shopping. I love cuddling. I love traveling. I love the colors red and green. And I really love laughing and making people laugh.
What inspires you?
What inspires me? I think about like what activates me to make art. Like what is the fire under my ass that makes me want to go, okay, make something. I really like when artists challenge themselves. So like if they've been doing the same thing over and over and they try something new, I really like seeing that and witnessing it. I'm really inspired by art and resistance. When people find ways to really like poke and really stir something, I'm inspired by theater, performance art. Performance art is really interesting to me because it's the weirdest art. Like it's the most confusing sometimes. Even as a viewer, you have to just stay and observe and wonder and go, why? And I don't know, that kind of art makes me interested because it's not easy. Like it's not like, not that, you know, painting isn't easy, but like it's a tangible form and it's physical and in front of you. But with performance art, it's like ephemeral and it's like of the time and moment, different site, different space, different people witnessing. It feels uncertain. So I'm inspired by performance art. And one thing I'm exploring or wanting to explore in my art is how to bring Filipino ritual and theater. So kind of like a ritual theater. But that's for later. I don't know how that will show up in my life and in my music or my art, but that seems interesting to me and scary to pursue.
I'm curious.
Me too.
I feel like solidarity is at the core of your work. The Philippines has a long history of colonization by Spain, the US, and Japan. Would you say that your awareness of that history shapes the way you relate to indigenous realities in North America?
Yes, definitely. I started actually writing raps in university because I was in like gender studies, but I was also, after I graduated, I got a job for 5 years as an archivist. So I was kind of doing what you're doing, interviewing Filipino activists in Vancouver. And I, for 5 years, interviewed, transcribed, and then reported back to the community. I particularly interviewed artists that are Filipino and activists because for about 3 shows over a span of 10 years, there were political fashion shows that the Filipino community created. And every dress was the story of a domestic worker. And it was shown to the community on International Women's Day. This was back in 2008, maybe, way back. And I learned about, you know, the very heartbreaking personal stories of like labor exploitation in the community, and then also finding community through activism in Vancouver and seeing how art has made that possible. And so I learned about, you know, what you said, the history of Spanish, American, and Japanese occupation in the Philippines, and learning that through these stories. But I feel like I'm learning more every day. I'm like, wow, you know, through new media. And, you know, there's like a film out called Magellan that just came out. I don't know. I filmed a music video in Madrid a week ago with a Japanese Spanish artist named Kuni Tomita. And together we made an amazing song that's coming out later this year. But we use that as an opportunity to create visual imagery that was like, the colonizers have no power over us. And for my friend who's Japanese Spanish to write a script for me as a Filipino Canadian, knowing our histories of like, you know, Japanese occupation in the Philippines, Spanish occupation in the Philippines, and also both being queer and pop stars that we know will like hit and empower our community. Yeah, so like the power of just knowing these histories really makes my art impactful, because I'm like, I'm referencing that from the past today.
In Canada, the initialism to SLGBTIQ+ includes Two-Spirit, a term used by some indigenous people to describe gender and sexual identities rooted in their cultures and traditions beyond Western frameworks. As a Filipinx artist creating on indigenous land, how do you navigate your own queerness in relation to that? And what have you learned from being close to Two-Spirit and First Nations communities?
Yeah, so I started performing a lot in the Filipino community. Like, my friends would be like, hey, Kim, we're doing this fundraiser. You should perform some tracks. And I was like, okay, cool. And I'd show up at a cafe and I'd play instrumentals off YouTube and then just like read my raps that I wrote in my journal. And I'd play on my guitar and, you know, I would expose myself to other poets in the community, many of which were indigenous and Filipino, brown, black, queer, trans, you know, and I would learn about people's personal stories through poetry. And I started getting asked to do facilitation workshops. And I have this one workshop I was a part of. I would go into high schools with one of my friends who is indigenous to Coquitlam, which is just outside of Vancouver. So it was an indigenous facilitator, indigenous to Turtle Island, because also Canada is a colonial name. So it's, we say so-called Canada. And Vancouver, the area I'm in, is actually the stolen land of the Squamish, the Musqueam, and the Tsleil-Waututh. And there's a lot of different awesome like programs that involve like hip hop workshops that like really spread like anti-colonial education. And I was a part of like being a non-indigenous like Filipino paired with like an indigenous hip hop artist. And then we would go to high schools and like talk about the history of residential school systems, for example, heavy topics of which is the history of Canada. And we would inspire youth to write raps, doodle, you know, do whatever, but like learn. So this was happening during the time I was writing my first album. And so I was, to call back to your question, always inspired by how my friends were like, no, that's messed up. In my culture, this is how we understand gender. This is how we understand, you know, gift giving or eating together. And I was like, oh, like that's indigenous ways of living. And then at the same time, I was in the Filipino community and we're like, oh, this is the way of like entering someone's house. You take your shoes off, you know, or you hold the hand of an elder and you put it to your forehead. Or you go into someone's house, you bring a gift. Like, this is the way of being, you know, in community. And I was like, oh, like, that's similar to a Filipino community. And this is beautiful. So I think, like, my Filipino community is fighting alongside indigenous community, at least the progressive Filipinos, not all Filipinos. Like, we have our flaws. Like, we have so much toxic traits that we need to, you know, look at. But the community I want to have around me is not just Filipino. It's like community that is like fighting alongside, you know, what matters. So back to that question, we're in conversation. I think we need to be, because we're so much stronger in that way. Yeah.
You've spoken about creating from a space of decolonial wisdom. What does that look like for you in the choices you make as an artist?
For me, like, it's like ancestral wisdom. Sometimes, like, even the words like decolonial can feel like inaccessible to like anyone. So sometimes I just like going, like, telling people who are not familiar with like decolonization or whatever, I like just being like, you know, trust your gut, you know, trust your intuition and your instincts, like trust your body. It's very wise, and follow that, you know. Oh, you, that makes you happy. That art makes you happy. Do it. And sometimes you'll find out that, you know, someone in your past, like an ancestor from far away, I don't know, was really interested in that same thing you're interested in. Or you might never know that, and you just follow what makes your heart beat. So that's really what I do in like my journey in music and art, is like I do whatever the fuck I want because I can.
Your music moves between softness and anger, or maybe rage, and is always intense. How do you decide how much of yourself to reveal in a song?
That's such a good question. With my last album, Shoebox, I wrote that during the early pandemic. And that was a time in which I was looking a lot at like my childhood. And so I wanted to tell very specific stories about my family, you know, glimpses of being in my 20s, very personal. And then my next body of work, it feels like I'm wanting to write more like love songs. So it's less about naming very specific instances in my life. And I think I'm in this place right now where I really want to make people dance. And I know sometimes when I'm at shows, I'll hear lyrics, but I won't get it. And sometimes it's like the emotionality that hits people, and that makes people relate. You don't even have to have the same language. Like, even for me traveling, I'm like, I use my face expressions a lot because that's all I have, you know? And I want to connect to many different audiences internationally, and I want to have my heart lead and my body feel it. So sometimes a track can be undeniable because you feel it, everyone feels it, and they're just nodding their head. That's kind of where I'm at right now. So it feels less about lyrics, even though I'm known for that. So that's a challenge and a risk that I'm taking, because it's like, oh, Kim Mortal, lyrics, intense, you know? But I want to go the opposite way, where it's more about sound.
Your work has already had some pretty iconic moments, from the L word to a shout out from a very well-known American politician. Was there a moment in your career that made you feel truly seen?
Yeah, actually, two moments. One of them was I made this reel of like going back to my dad's homeland. And that was less about, you know, listen to my song, download my album. You know, it was less about that. And it was more about like, this is a glimpse of my real life and my family history. Come with me, come on this journey. And the amount of messages, DMs, and shares that I got from people going, wow, my family, I don't talk to them anymore too, but I want to go back and reconnect to my roots. And like, this made me cry. You know, the amount of messages and the reception I got was like beautiful. So that was like incredible. And then the second one was I made a theater piece, a one-person theater piece. And it was 20 minutes. There were only 20 people in the room. And I was so proud of it. And it was basically the story behind my music, but it talked about mental illness in my family. And in it, I acted as my mom, my grandma, my brother, and me. And I wrote the whole script with comedic support from my partner, who's a comedian, because it's a heavy script, so you got to put humor in it. So I felt so seen. In the end of the show, there was the applause, and then I went back on stage and I cried. That was the best. And I don't think I'll ever do that play again. It was just like of that time, and I needed to do it to process Shoebox, my album.
Thank you for sharing. Can I ask you a slightly selfish question?
Yes.
I love the music of your friend Bobby Sanchez. Would you pass along an invitation to this podcast if she ever comes to Europe?
Oh my God, Bobby Sanchez, come on Queer Voices. She would be so, I think she'd be really hype. If anything, she should come to Germany. She should do a whole UK Europe tour. You're not the only one that also brought up Bobby Sanchez.
Like, oh, really?
When I was also in Barcelona, people are like, oh my God, like Bobby Sanchez, she's amazing. I met her in New York for the first time. She was modeling for a fashion show for her friend. And she also rapped at that same show. And then we hung out and got Thai food after or something. And she's been such... I love you, Bobby. She's just fire.
Yes, she is. Kim, what is it like for you to live in Canada or so-called Canada as a queer POC?
Yeah, I feel like just like anywhere you go in the world, you'll find other queer POC just like you. And like, there's always shit in every place you go to, and there's always a space to make art, rest, and fight back. And I have a great set of amazing set of, I have a great set of friends. But being a queer POC in Canada is interesting. And yeah, like even meeting queer POCs, you know, here in Europe, I'm like, we all kind of feel the same. And when we meet each other, we're like, oh my God, I'm glad you exist, you know? So yeah, just in like, you know, moments of when we don't feel seen or where we feel isolated, it just makes meeting each other so much grander. Yeah.
Is there anything you wish for queer POCs in Canada or in North America or in the world?
Wow, that's a big question. I feel like there's this whole thing of like, you know, representation, you know, like be visible. But it's also this thing of like visibility and invisibility. Like you can feel seen, but then also you're not, you know, and like it comes down to like, are we actually getting our needs met? You know, like there's the understanding too that the most oppressed amongst us, if they're not safe, we're not safe. So we have to fight for the most oppressed amongst us. And, you know, I had this really good conversation with a Filipino activist, Gemma Basin Espaycapua in Barcelona. She was saying, you know, enough of this. Am I Filipino enough? Am I brown enough? You know, oh, I can't speak my language. Enough of that. It should be more like, are you fighting for the most oppressed? And that goes for being a queer person too. Like, oh, am I gay enough? Am I queer enough? Like, am I accepted by the queers? It's like, no, it's like, are you fighting? Are you fighting for the most oppressed? I feel like, yeah, there's the representation. Like, even in Vancouver, we have the first Asian mayor, but he's a Zionist. He cuts housing funding for the homeless. He's a bag of shit. And he's celebrated because he's Asian, right? So for queer POCs, like the wish is for us to be truly, deeply safe and to fucking exist freely in all, every corner, all quarters. And that's like mass change. That's like deep changes in policy. I think deep change.
Is there anything else you'd like to share in this podcast?
Well, I'm just really happy to know that you're doing what you're doing, and like Queer Voices, you know, like is archiving history and, you know, all the many stories. I don't even know how many have you done? Do you know?
Until now, I think you're gonna be the 20th episode.
Yes, that's special. Like, I feel like, yeah, just knowing you exist is great. And I'm so happy that I got to be a part of this archive. And things coming up for me, I have a remix EP of my song, This Dyke, that's coming out.
Woohoo!
Yeah, and it's gonna feature international artists. So representation remixes of This Dyke from Argentina, Germany, the Philippines, and Vancouver.
Cool. Kim, before we wrap up, how about a quickie? Don't worry, it's not about sex. It's just a rapid fire round of questions.
Fun.
Okay, let's go. The quality you appreciate most in someone else?
Humor.
Your greatest quality?
Humor.
What makes you happy?
A good coffee.
Something that made you proud lately?
Making people dance on stage in Munich.
A song you love at the moment?
Free by Samara Sin.
Someone you find hot?
Michelle Rodriguez.
A content you'd recommend?
Animation by No Face.
One big wish you have?
To pay off my student loans.
And your mood right now?
Hungry. Hungry, happy. Hungry, happy.
Thank you so much, Kim, for your time and for helping make queer voices louder.
Yes! Get loud! Loud!
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Business, 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 business. I don't want to write a record. I want to reflect the time. Stop business as usual. Stop the genocide. I don't want to write a record. I want to reflect the time. Stop business as usual. Stop the genocide. I don't want to write a record. I want to reflect the time. Stop business as usual. Stop the genocide. I don't want to write a record. I want to reflect the time. Stop business, 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 business. I don't wanna write a banger, I wanna reflect the time. Stop business as usual, stop the genocide. It's land back from Philippines to Palestine. It's time to uprise till we're all free. Fuck individualism, this is collectivism. No more consumerism, tune into global rhythms. We make the revolution irresistible. Leaning on each other, holding them accountable. They don't give a fuck about us, but we will still talk shit. We designing graphics, we reciting telephone scripts. We got our receipts, local archivist. We flood an inbox, the mayor's office. We calling his shit, don't be complicit. We boost the info, and we bear witness. We taking our lead from indigenous. We unstoppable, we won't stay silent. I don't wanna write a record, I wanna reflect the time. Stop business as usual, stop the genocide. I don't wanna write a record, I wanna reflect the time. Stop business as usual, stop the genocide. I don't wanna write a record, I wanna reflect the time. Stop business as usual.